Lieutenant Skyot waved her protest away. And ignoring what anyone else would have seen as a natural local hierarchy, your house can't afford to offer clientage to anyone here, yet. Neither you nor I can make any contracts with anyone, for now. We had to exempt ourselves from our house's contracts and take clientage directly from Anander Mianai while we serve. But we still have those family connections, and those families can use connections we make now, even if we can't. And we can certainly use them when we retire. Getting your feet on the ground during an annexation is the one sure way to increase your house's financial and social standing. Which is fine until the wrong person does it. We tell ourselves that everything is the way Amat wants it to be, that everything that is because of God. So if we're wealthy and respected, that's how things should be. The aptitudes prove that it's all just, that everyone gets what they deserve, and when the right people test into the right careers, that just goes to show how right it all is. I'm not the right people, Lieutenant On set down her empty cup, and Lieutenant Skyot refilled it. You're only one of thousands, but you're a noticeable one to someone. And this annexation is different. It's the last one. Last chance to grab property, to make connections on the sort of scale the upper houses have always been accustomed to. They don't like to see any of those last chances go to houses like yours. And to make it worse, you're subverting the local hierarchy. I used the local hierarchy. Lieutenants, I cautioned. Lieutenant On's outburst had been loud enough to be heard in the street, if anyone had been on the street this evening. If the Tonmend were running things here, that was as things must be in Amat's mind, right? But they... Lieutenant On stopped. I wasn't sure what she had been about to say. Perhaps that they had imposed their authority over Orrs relatively recently. Perhaps that they were, in Orrs, a numerical minority, and Lieutenant On's goal had been to reach the largest number of people she could. Careful, warned Lieutenant Skyot, though Lieutenant On hadn't needed the warning. Any Rodchai soldier knew not to speak without thinking. If you hadn't found those weapons, someone would have had an excuse not only to toss you out of Orrs, but to come down hard on the Orzians and favor the upper city. Restoring the universe to its proper order. And then, of course, anyone inclined could have used the incident as an example of how soft we've gotten. If we'd stuck to so-called impartial aptitudes testing, if we'd executed more people, if we still made ancillaries... I have ancillaries, Lieutenant On pointed out. Lieutenant Skyot shrugged. Everything else would have fit. They could ignore that. They'll ignore anything that doesn't get them what they want. And what they want is anything they can grab. She seemed so calm, even almost relaxed. I was used to not seeing data for Lieutenant Skyot. But this disjunction between her demeanor and the seriousness of the situation... Lieutenant On's still extreme distress and, to be honest, my own discomfort at events, made her seem oddly flat and unreal to me. I understand Jen Shinnan's part in this, Lieutenant On said. I do, I get that. But I don't understand how anyone else would benefit. The question she couldn't ask directly was, of course, why Anander Mianai would be involved, or why she would want to return to some previous, proper order, given she herself had certainly approved any changes. And why, if she wanted such a thing, she didn't merely order the thing she desired. If questioned, both lieutenants could, and likely would, say they weren't speaking of the Lord of the Roch, but about some unknown person who must be involved. But I was certain that wouldn't hold up under an interrogation with drugs. Fortunately, such an event was unlikely. and I don't see why anyone with that sort of access couldn't just order me gone and put someone they preferred in my place, if that was all they wanted.
Maybe that wasn't all they wanted, answered Lieutenant Skyot. But clearly, someone did at the very least want those things, and thought they would benefit from doing it this particular way. And you did as much as you could to avoid people getting killed. Anything else wouldn't have made any difference.
She emptied her own cup.
You're going to stay in touch with me, she said, not a question, not a request. And then more gently, I'll miss you.
For a moment I thought Lieutenant On might cry again. Who's replacing me?
Lieutenant Skyot named an officer and a ship.
Human troops, then.
Lieutenant On was momentarily disquieted and then sighed, frustrated. I imagine she was remembering that Ors was no longer her problem.
I know, said Lieutenant Skyot. I'll talk to her. You watch yourself. Now annexations are a thing of the past. Ancillary troop carriers are crowded with the useless daughters of prestigious houses who can't be assigned to anything lower.
Lieutenant On frowned, clearly wanting to argue, thinking maybe of her fellow Esk lieutenants, or of herself. Lieutenant Skyot saw her expression and smiled ruefully.
Well, Dariot is all right. It's the rest I'm warning you to look out for. Very high opinions of themselves and very little to justify it.
Skyot had met some of them during the annexation, had always been entirely, correctly polite to them.
You don't need to tell me that, said Lieutenant On.
Lieutenant Skyot poured more arak, and for the rest of the night, their conversation was the sort that needs no reporting. At length, Lieutenant On slept again, and by the time she woke, I had hired boats to take us to the mouth of the river, near Kul Dves, and loaded them with our scant luggage and my dead segment. In Kul Dves, the mechanism that controlled its armor and a few other bits of tech would be removed for another use.
If you're going to do something that crazy, save it for when it'll make a difference, Lieutenant Skyot had said. And I had agreed. I still agree. The problem is, knowing when what you are about to do will make a difference. I'm not only speaking of the small actions that, cumulatively, over time, or in great numbers, steer the course of events in ways too chaotic or subtle to trace. The single word that directs a person's fate, and ultimately the fates of those she comes in contact with, is of course a common subject of entertainments and moralizing stories. But if everyone were to consider all the possible consequences of all one's possible choices, no one would move a millimeter or even dare to breathe for fear of the ultimate results. I mean, on a larger and more obvious scale. In the way that Anander Mianai herself determined the fates of whole peoples, or the way my own actions could mean life or death for thousands, or merely 83, huddled in the Temple of Ikt, surrounded. I ask myself, as surely Lieutenant On asked herself, what would have been the consequences of refusing the order to fire? Straightforwardly, obviously, her own death would have been an immediate consequence. And then, immediately afterward, those 83 people would have died, because I would have shot them at Anander Mianai's direct order. No difference, except Lieutenant On would be dead. The omens had been cast, and their trajectories were straightforward, calculable, direct, and clear. But neither Lieutenant On nor the Lord of the Roch knew that in that moment, had one disc shifted just slightly, the whole pattern might have landed differently. Sometimes, when omens are cast, one flies or rolls off where you didn't expect and throws the whole pattern out of shape. Had Lieutenant On chosen differently, that one segment, cut off,
disoriented, and yes, horrified at the thought of shooting Lieutenant On, might have turned its gun on me and I instead. What then? Ultimately, such an action would only have delayed Lieutenant On's death and ensured my own, One Esk's destruction. Which, since I didn't exist as any sort of individual, wasn't distressing to me. But the death of those 83 people would have been delayed. Lieutenant Skyot would have been forced to arrest Lieutenant On. I'm convinced she wouldn't have shot her, though she would have been legally justified in doing so. But she wouldn't have shot the Tanmind, because me and I wouldn't have been there to give the order. And Jen Shinnen would have had time and opportunity to say whatever it was that the Lord of the Roch had, as things actually happened, prevented her from saying. What difference would that have made? Perhaps a great deal of difference. Perhaps none at all. There are too many unknowns, too many apparently predictable people who are, in reality, balanced on a knife edge, or whose trajectories might be easily changed, if only I knew. If you're going to do something that crazy, save it for when it'll make a difference. But, absent near omniscience, there's no way to know when that is. You can only make your best approximate calculation. You can only make your throw and try to puzzle out the results afterward. Chapter 11. The explanation why I needed the gun, why I wanted to kill Anander Mianai, took a long time. The answer wasn't a simple one, or more accurately, the simple answer would only raise further questions for Striegen. So I didn't attempt to use it, but instead began the whole story at the beginning and let her infer the simple answer from the longer, complex one. By the time I was done, the night was far advanced. Saevarden was asleep, breathing slow, and Striegen herself was clearly exhausted. For 3 minutes there was no sound but Saevarden's breath accelerating as she transitioned into some state closer to wakefulness, or perhaps was troubled by a dream. "And now I know who you are," Striegen said finally, tiredly. "Or who you think you are." There was no need for me to say anything in reply to that. By now she would believe what she wished about me, despite what I had told her. "Doesn't it bother you?" Striegen continued. "Didn't it ever bother you that you're slaves?"
"Who?"
"The ships, the warships, so powerful, armed. The officers inside are at your mercy every moment. What stops you from killing them all and declaring yourselves free? I've never been able to understand how the Rajchai can keep the ships enslaved."
"If you think about it," I said, "you'll see you already know the answer to your question."
She was silent again, inward-looking. I sat motionless, waiting on the results of my throw. "You were at Garsed," she said after a while.
"Yes."
"Did you know Saevarden? Personally, I mean?"
"Yes."
Did you participate?"
"In the destruction of the Garsedai?" She gestured acknowledgement. "I did. Everyone who was there did." She grimaced, with disgust, I thought.
"No one refused."
"I didn't say that. In fact, my own captain had refused and died. Her replacement had qualms. She couldn't have hidden that from her ship, but said nothing and did as she was told." "It's easy to say that if you were there, you would have refused, that you would rather die than participate in the slaughter. But it all looks very different when it's real, when the moment comes to choose. Her eyes narrowed in disagreement, I thought, but I had only spoken the truth.